Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Nun. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara before today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 18 lines from the bottom of Daf Nun. You will notice there are two Mishnayos on this daf, so we're beginning from the first of the two Mishnayos, 18 lines from the bottom. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, which reads, Baal, a husband, Hamazkir Mokoim Lishlucho, who mentions a specific place for his agent, Loseis, Kesef Hakidushin Leisha, the marriage money offered to a woman in exchange for her agreeing to marry him. Get Leisha, a person who's divorcing his wife, and he mentions to his agent who is going to convey the divorce document where to deliver it. Haim yesh lahakpid lofia davke ba'oisamokum. Is it necessary? Is it a binding requirement to appear specifically in the place mentioned by the husband? The Mishnah. Ha'imer l'shlucho, tsei v'kadesh li isha plonis b'mokoyin ploni. Man says, go and marry on my behalf a woman in a certain place. V'holach v'kidsha b'mokoyin acher, and the agent went and married her on the man's behalf in a different place. Eino mikudeshes. She is not going to be married. So the result, namely Eino mikudeshes, is coming on the heels of instructions that were stated just as we read, where the husband said, go and marry a woman on my behalf in a specific place. However, there's another case. Harehi b'mokom ploni. The man says, go and marry a woman on my behalf. Behold, she is in this place. So when saying harehi b'mokom ploni and v'kidsha b'mokom acher harehi mukudeshes, and he ends up marrying her in a different place, the marriage is valid. The Rashi says harehi shom timtsena. The husband, the man, is saying to his agent, "You'll find her over there." The einzu kepeda. That is not a remark of insistence on his part. The Gemara continues now. The Gemara opens and says, Utnan Nami Gabi Gitin. A parallel Mishnah appears with regard to giving a get. Ha'oimer tenu get ze li'ishti b'mokoyin ploni. The husband says, give the divorce to my wife and he mentions a specific place, v'nosel b'mokom acher, and the agent delivers it to her in another place, posel. It's not a legitimate divorce. However, harehi b'mokom ploni, the husband says, you will find her in such and such a place, v'nosnoi lo b'mokom acher, and the agent gave it to her in a different place, kosher, the get is valid, because in saying harehi b'mokom ploni, the husband was merely saying you'll be able to find her in such and such a place. It's instructions to make it easier for the agent to find her. That's in contrast with his request, give the get to her in a specific place. There, as we said, if done otherwise, so that invalidates the action. There's no agency for the delivery in a different place. Utsricha, the Gemara, in characteristic Shas style, points out that We need both sources. In other words, by teaching me this halacha, this contrast between and b'mokum ploni versus harehi b'mokum ploni, by teaching me in one, I wouldn't have been able to figure out the other. In teaching me by gittin, I wouldn't have been able to figure it out by kiddushin, and vice versa. Each one is necessary to be taught. And here the Gemara makes a point. We call this a long point until the Mishnah. Utsricha, the necessity of teaching me the idea of being makpid, of his insistence on a specific place. De'i ashmin and gabi kiddushin, if we would have told that there is such a type of instruction that insists on a specific place with regard to marriage. B'mokom de lekurva ka'asi, kiddushin is where the husband is drawing her near unto him. He's marrying her. So where that is what's taking place, there's a good reason for him to be insistent on a specific place. B'hai asra rachmuli, in this particular place, the people there have affinity towards me. Falo mamli mili ului, and they won't speak anything negative about me. Bahai asra, in another place, sonu li, there are people that have a disdain toward me. They hate me. Mamli mili ului, they will speak ill of me. So a man who's trying to draw the woman unto him to marry him, he's very concerned with preserving his, we'll say, his good name, so as to not to interfere with the marriage from taking place. Avol gabi gitin, in the case of a divorce, d'larachuka ka'asi, where he is distancing her from him, he is divorcing her. Amar, there's room to have thought, lo ichpasle, he couldn't care less where the get is delivered to her. So had we taught this idea of being makpid on a specific place in the realm of kiddushin, I wouldn't have been able to extrapolate from that to the case of gittin. Ve'i ashmin gabi gerishin, and had we taught this idea of insistence on a specific place with regard to gittin, with regard to divorce, and any deviation would be an illegitimate, would be an unacceptable divorce. Well, there's logic by the case of divorce. Bahai asra nicha le dinivzi. Bahai asra lo nicha le. Lo nichale. What does that mean, delivzi? So Rashi says something interesting. Three lines of under the Gemara text, Rashi says, third wide line, lo nichale delivzi, shamigarish is ishto ginai hu lo. One who divorces his wife, it is degrading to the man. It's we'll say, if you want to put it in politically correct terms, it's not complimentary to him. Ginai means that which is negative, that which is frowned upon, that which is degrading. So that a person realizes that in divorcing his wife, he is exposing himself to an element of degradation. So it's of concern to him where he's willing to expose himself to that, as opposed to other places where he doesn't want to be exposed to that. And hence the Gemara said, in the case of Gerishin, Bahai Asra Nichole Denivzi, in the place that he specified, so it's all right with him that he'll be degraded, he'll be defamed. However, Bahai Asra, in another place, Lo Nichole, he's not accepting of that. Avogabi kiddushin, emo lo ichpasle. But with regard to a marriage, had we taught you the halacha with regard to divorce, so we just explained a good reason why a person would be insistent. But with regard to marriage, I wouldn't There's not that logic obviously doesn't apply. I would think that it doesn't matter to him. Even if he said, marry the woman for me in a specific place, maybe that's not binding. Tzricha. Therefore, it has to be taught that by Kiddushin as well, if he mentions a specific place, by saying Seva Kaddish Lisha place B'Mokom Ploni, he means there and not somewhere else. The Mishnah. Before we read the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. Hamakadish Isha Amanas Shein Oleh, a man marries a wife with a specifying or articulating a condition, on condition that she doesn't have upon her Nedarim, no vows, or Mumim, no blemishes. By the way, we mentioned that there were two Mishnayos. There are actually three Mishnayos on this daf, so that just for the sake of accuracy, I'm making mention of that. Anyway, we now turn to the second Mishnah on the page. Hamekadesh es ho'isha almanas she'en olah nedarim. He married her with the condition that she doesn't have vows. V'nimso leh nedarim, and it turns out that she does have vows, that she's a woman that had made vows. Eino mikudeshes. There is no marriage. Konsostam v'nimso leh nedarim. There may be different approaches to how to present this section of the Mishnah, but we'll assume for our purposes that a man who had, at the time of the initial marriage, may stipulated, I'm marrying her on condition that there are no vows. Marriage in Talmudic law takes place in two stages. There's the initial offering her of money or two other methods, which we learned about at the beginning of the Masichta, that establishes Kiddushin, and then there's a consummation of the marriage that will take place later. We nowadays don't see that because both stages take place more or less one after the other under the marriage canopy. But in the time of the Gemara, and certainly the Mishnah, you have two stages. And the consummation of the marriage, the konsa, where he takes her, the wife, under the marriage canopy, that's the second stage. And in this case, konsa stam, he took her there without reiterating his condition. V'nimso leh nedarim, and lo and behold, she has vows. Teitse shelo b'ksuba. Now, Rashi points out, a divorce document, though, will be necessary, midrabbanan. However, as far as his money obligations toward her, to pay her the ksuba, the financial guarantees that a woman ordinarily gets when she is divorced, not so over here. Bearing in mind that at the time of the Kiddushin, he had specified, I'm marrying on condition that you don't have the vows. If the vows become revealed or become known to him before he consummated the marriage, so then she's not married at all. And when we say she's not married at all, there's no need for a divorce document. However, if the process continued and only after he consummated his marriage, had intimacy with her, and then the vows became exposed, the vows that she had taken upon herself earlier became known to him. So the Mishnah's teaching, Teitzei Shelo B'Ksuba, she leaves, loses her rights to the Ksuba monies, the financial guarantees a woman has, but a get is required. There's a svara for that, which I'll mention, but without getting involved, and that is that ein adam oisa bilaso bilas znus. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Almanas shein olea mumin, v'nimtsu ba mumin, eino mikudeshes. He marries her on condition that she has no blemishes, and it turns out that she does. There's no marriage. If, however, konsa, it went on to this, he didn't discover the blemishes until he consummated his marriage. That's konsastam. He consummated his marriage without reiterating his stipulation. Venimtsu ba mumin, and he discovered then the blemishes. Teitse shelo biksuba. Shekol hamumin shapois apoisim bekan apoisim be noshim. All those kinds of blemishes that would render a kohen unfit to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Similarly, those are the kind of mumin that when a husband expresses his unacceptance of them upon discovery, they will invalidate the marriage. This Mishnah then speaks about whether or not there is a kiddushin, and it also speaks about the whether or not she will be entitled to a ksuba. So there are two topics featured here: the topic of the marriage taking hold or not, and the issue of non-payment of ksuba. The Gemara points out, "Utnan nami gabi ksubos ki hai gavna." This Mishnah appears in Maseches Ksubos in the seventh perek. So we have a Mishnah in the seventh parak, just like this Mishnah. And the Gemara explains why you have the same contents taught in the two Masechtas. Hocha, here, Kiddushin Itzderichale. The Masechta is preoccupied with whether or not a marriage takes place. So the Mishnah has, we'll say, Kiddushin value. Tana Ksubos Otu Kiddushinin. And by the way, the law of ksuba is also taught. Hasam, there in Maseches Ksubas, which focuses on the financial guarantees that a woman is entitled to. So ksubos, it's to relay the content of the Mishnah dealing with ksuba is what's necessary over there. And Tana Kiddushin Otu Ksubos, and it teaches laws of Kiddushin along with along with the laws of ksuba. The Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei topic heading. Shalosh dugmois, three examples. Shel shlichas savloinois achar kiddushin she'enon kiddushin. The sending of gifts by the man to the woman following a kiddushin, an initial marriage, an initial attempt to create a marriage, which is not an effective marriage, not an effective establisher of marital status. The three examples now appear in the Mishnah. Naturally, I'm sure most of you have guessed, the Gemara will be preoccupied with trying to understand why do I need each one of the examples. So the Mishnah says, Hamakadesh shtei noshim b'shove pruta. Maybe before we even read, we didn't emphasize the main point here, is that we're going to feature, we'll say, non-marriages, but following these non-marriages, the man sends gifts. The issue comes up, do the gifts that he sends represent his, the gifts that he sends afterwards, do they represent an attempt to establish the marriage? Or are they simply viewed as gifts which a groom would send to his bride? The Mishnah says, HaMekadesh Shtei Noshim B'Shovah Pruta, man marries two women with one pruta worth of value. Oy isha achas bepochs mishover pruta, or he offers one woman something of less than a pruta worth of value. Afal pi shesholach sivloinos li achar mikan, even though after these he sends her gifts. The Gemara continues, the Mishnah continues at the top of Amud Beis, Eino Mekudeshes. the gifts that he sends subsequently do not represent a marriage. Shemachmas kiddushin horishonim shalach. His motivation for sending the gifts was the original act of kiddushin. So if you look over the two cases we've seen so far, if you try to marry two wives with one pruta, how much value is each woman getting? Each one's getting worth less than the minimum value to establish a marriage. So there's no marriage. Or similarly, it marries one woman, offering her less than a shava pruta worth of value. So there's no marriage. He sends gifts afterwards. Those gifts were an extension of, we'll say, proper etiquette, we'll say, that people practice after they did an act of marriage. But not that the gifts themselves represent an act of marriage on his part. And the Mishnah goes on with the third example, V'chein Katon Shekidesh. A minor offered money to a woman in hopes of marrying her, but minors don't have the capacity of establishing marriage. And that minor, he ends up sending her gifts after he reaches adulthood. So he was, just to illustrate the case, he was a couple weeks before his bar mitzvah and he married a woman, which is a non-marriage, and then after his bar mitzvah, he sends her gifts. Those gifts do not represent his marrying her. Utsricha. And you'll notice we have a long marking, and the point of the Gemara is, why do I need each one of these examples? On the side, we have as our topic heading, the Nosei, HaGemara Masbira, the Gemara will explain, Lo Matzrichim Dugmos Nosafos BaMishnah, why do I need the additional examples of the Mishnah Shasav Loinus Shenishluch Acher Kach, that gifts that are sent after an unsuccessful attempt to establish a marriage, Einom Kiddushin, that the gifts do not represent an act of marriage. Klomar, Diesh Lasbir Ma Hoya Havamina Lachshav Shasav Loinus Heim Kiddushin. We have to explain, what was the Havamina, what was the initial thinking that the savlonos might have been the act of kiddushin, the Gemara. Again, we emphasize this one long point. Utsricha, I need the three examples regarding the savlonos sent after the called the non kiddushin. Di ashminin shava pruta. Had we taught the first case of two women with one pruta. Aidi de konofik mamona mine toi. There came forth from him mamona, actual value. A pruta. He paid out a pruta. He paid out a pruta to two women. He said to two women, here, take this. We gave it to one woman, saying, take this for yourself and your friend over here to be my wives. So in a case like that, the person, toy means he might make a mistake. Rashi says, toy v'sovar te kiddushin inu, that was real kiddushin, because he paid out a pruta. V'lo masik adaite de savlonos l'shem kiddushin. There, he wouldn't think that the savlonos represent the kiddushin. There, in that first case, he would really think that he's accomplished a marriage and that the gifts do not represent a marriage. So if I had taught that case, I would not have known, I wouldn't have been able to figure out from that the second example of the Mishnah, that the savlonos there too are not an actual marriage. Why? Avol pachos mishove pruta. But the case of marrying one woman with less than a pruta worth of value, Amo, there, I, without the Mishnah, I would have thought, Yodea she'en kiddushin toivsin b'bochus mishova pruta. Everyone knows that there isn't marriage with less than a pruta worth of value. V'chi ko mishadir savloinois, and when he sends the gifts, adaito de kiddushin ko mishadir, he's sending those gifts as the act of marriage. Oh, therefore, the Mishnah has to teach that in that case as well, the gifts are not the marriage. Ve'i ashmi'inen hanitarti, and had we taught those two cases, mishum debein pruta lepochos mishover pruta lokim lehu leinshi. Whether it's a pruta or it's less than a pruta, people aren't precise, they're not exacting, and they rely on the kiddushin, they rely on what they paid out, and not on the gifts. So had we taught the first two cases, telling you there that the savlonos are not kiddushin, I wouldn't have known regarding the third example. Avol koton shekidesh, a minor that tries to marry a woman. I'll call yodim shenki dushe koton klum. Everyone knows that the marriage done by a minor is nothing. Emo, so I would have thought, ki kom ishadis of linus, when he finally does send gifts, he sends the gifts, as we pointed out earlier, after he passed bar mitzvah, Adaito de kiddushi kamishader. He is sending them to establish the marriage. Kamashmalon, therefore, the Mishnah teaches that in that case as well, he was relying on the original, the initial marriage, to be the mechanism that created the marriage and not the gifts. Before we go in any further in the Gemara text, you notice there's a slash mark indicating that a new train of thought follows. On the side, we have a nosei tfali, a general topic heading. It reads as follows. Shnei matzavim shel sivlonos. There are two situations of gifts. Number one, achar kiddushin. Following an act of marriage, tovim or ruim, either an effective marriage or an ineffective marriage, a weak marriage. Number two, savlonos b'li shehekdimon kiddushin klal, gifts sent without a prior act of marriage. So as we said, these are, we're offering this as a general topic heading. Now we have a more immediate topic heading. Nosei / mivneh, an aleph and beis appear. Shnei lishonos be rabo. We'll see two versions of rabo, uma she'ina loy abaye, and that which abaye responds being in chushishin lesavlonos, regarding the stance, the opinion of chushishin. Chushishin is an expression meaning that we must consider the savlonos as being an act of marriage. Now we turn to the Gemara. Itmar, Rav Huna Omar chushishin lesavlonos, v'chein Omar Rabo chushishin lesavlonos. Rashi on the upper part of the narrow lines, chushishin lesavlonos, mi sheshidech beisha. Someone who was planning to marry a woman. Shidech, shiduchin is to join a man and woman together in marriage. So someone who was planning, who was discussing marriage with a woman. V'nisratza. And she agreed. V'kidam v'sholach savlonos b'eidim. And after hearing her acquiescence to his offer of marriage, after her response to their discussion regarding his interest in marrying her, and she says, "Yeah, you're the kind of person I would like to marry, or you're the guy I'd like to marry." He then sends her gifts. He sends her gifts with witnesses, and witnesses see this. we consider that the gifts that he sends to her are the represents the act of marriage. If she would accept marriage from a second man, she'll need a get from the first man. Choshishin usually, literally means we suspect, we consider the possibility that. So that's what we're saying over here. The explanation that we're giving is based on Rashi. The Tosfos raises a question on Rashi's approach and offers a different approach, but we're going to stick with Rashi's approach. So, Choshishin leSavlonos, as we described, there had been a discussion between a couple, and after the discussion, he sends her gifts. Let us not confuse what we're talking about now with a man that offers something of value to a woman, and as he's offering it to her, he says, "Hare at mekudeshes li." That's not what is happening here. Here, according to Rashi, there had been a discussion between the two, and agreement in principle to get married. At that point, there was no giving of any money to the woman or anything of value to her. And shortly thereafter, he sends her gifts. According to Rav Huna and Rabba as well, you have to suspect that that represents a marriage. And as we said, if she should at some point decide to marry someone else, they will tell you she needs to get a get from the first fellow, the fellow who sent her the gifts. Omar Rabba umoisvina nashmaitin. Rabba says, though I said choshishin leSavlonos, there is what to ask on what I said. Quoting from our Mishnah, he raises a question. Af al pi shesholach sivlonos liachar mikan eino mekudeshes. The sending of gifts afterwards does not establish a marriage. Well, you see from the Mishnah that the sending of gifts is insignificant. Why then do I say Choshishin leSavlonos? Interestingly, Rabba raised the question on himself, and someone else answers, Omar le'abaye, Hasam kidekotoni taimo. There in the Mishnah, there is a reason to downplay the gifts. As the Mishnah itself says, Shemachmas Kiddushin Horishonim Sholach. In the case of the Mishnah, the gifts were sent on the heels of an initial act. I'm not going to say effective, because it wasn't effective, but an initial formal attempt to create a marriage. So it was a formal attempt to create a marriage through the giving of something. It wasn't enough, but it was a formal attempt. And when the gifts are sent on the heels of that, so the gifts do not represent an act of marriage. However, where there was no attempt to establish a marriage initially, there was merely discussion. We said shiduchin, there was discussion about it, and agreement in principle to get married. But the first act of, let's say, value exchange, of sending something of value to the woman in the form of the gifts, it could very well be then, as Rabba said, Choshishin, where Choshish, we suspect that the Savlonos were the act of marriage. We continue. Iko Diamri, a second version. Omar Rabba, Mino Amino Lo. From where do I know? Choshishin leSavlonos. Kidektoni Taimo. As the Mishnah teaches. Now, just notice that this section, this Ikodami, we four lines of Rabba speaking. So Rabba explains, how do I know that Choshishin leSavlonos? Well, based on the Mishnah, as the Mishnah teaches. In the Mishnah it said that the gifts were nothing. Shemachmas kiddushin rishonim shalach. In the case of the Mishnah, when the gifts are coming on the heels of a formal act of Kiddushin, though ineffective, so there the gifts have no significance as an act of Kiddushin themselves. So Rabba points out, Hachahu detoy. In the case of the Mishnah, there a person can make a mistake thinking that the original act of marriage was the act, and hence the gifts are not an attempt to create a marriage. Ha bi'alma. But in general, if gifts are sent without having been preceded by an attempt to create an act of marriage, havu kiddushin, the gifts then would take on significance as being a possible act of kiddushin. Now here, again, this is all part of a second version. The Abaye's response to that, or his rejection of that, the Abaye lo mibaya ko'omar, the Mishnah's style in teaching about the gifts and their ineffectiveness is in the lo mibaya format. Lo mibaya means I don't have to tell you, and it's as follows. Lo mibaya be'alma, I don't have to tell you in general that gifts that are sent after a mere discussion between them about the wanting to get married, the lo nochis l'toiras kiddushin klal, there wasn't any formal act of marriage. So it's poshut, it's obvious that the gifts are not of any legal consequence. Elo afilu hacha. But even here in the examples of the Mishnah, the Nochis Litoras Kiddushin, there was an attempt to establish a formal marriage. And he recounted that later that it's not, that it was ineffective. Emo havu kiddushin. There I would think that the gifts do function as a replacement act of kiddushin. Once again, that's where he had made a formal attempt at establishing a marriage. If you look in Rashi, you'll find a number of lines up from here. It says, "Avol hocha denochis lahachi umitoch sheolo aliboy v'nizkar she'en kiddushav klum." And when he realized that his original act of kiddushin was ineffective, v'sholach sivlonos, and then sent gifts on the heels of a formal act of marriage, but his discovering that it was not binding, then sent the gifts, emol l'shem kiddushin. There, I would have thought that the gifts are, we'll say, a type of replacement. Why? Because he started a formal act of kiddushin. That's the case in the Mishnah. So Komash Malon, the Mishnah reveals that even there, the gifts are of no consequence. So Abaye is pointing out that I don't have to tell you the case that Rabba was addressing, where there was no prior attempt at establishing a formal act of marriage, that the gifts are nothing. The gifts are not coming on the heels of some kind of a serious attempt at establishing a marriage. But even where they're coming on the heels of a formal act of marriage, he discovered that it was ineffective, was less than a shava pruta, or he was a minor, there was room to think that the gifts were coming to replace the original formal act. And therefore, the Mishnah teaches that even there, the gifts are nothing. My havi Allah. Well, how are we to rule on this? Amar of Papa, the Asra, in a locale, there are two practices the Gemara makes reference to. In a locale, the Mekatshi Vahoder Mesavli, where an act of marriage takes place first, and only after that do husbands send gifts to their brides. Chayshinon, if you see gifts sent by a man to a woman, were choshesh that they are married. Rashi says, Chayshinon, the kevan du'ur chayu likvushi b'reisha, since the custom is to marry first, Chayshinon de'shodar hani l'shem kiddushin. There is a reason to think that he sent these gifts as Kiddushin. Continuing in the Gemara, Misabli v'hoder mekachi, in locales that first men will send gifts before formal acts of marriage, loi chayshinon. Then there's nothing to suspect. When that you have witnesses that see gifts that he sent from him to her, that's not reason to think that they're married. The Gemara asks, Mekachi v'hodar mesabli pshita. In locales that first an act of marriage takes place and then gifts are sent, so it's obvious that if you see gifts sent, you'd be choshesh that she is married to him. Lo tzricha. No, the Mishnah is necessary. The ruling is necessary. The ruba mekachi v'hodar mesabli. The majority of people, in fact, marry first through a formal act of marriage and then send gifts. Umiuta, but a minority mesabli v'hodar mekachi would send gifts first and then go through a formal act of marriage. Mahu detemo nechush limiuta. Without Rav Papa's ruling, I would have thought we should consider the minority. And if you consider the minority, then she would remain becheskas pnius, she would remain with the status of being unmarried. Komash malon. So Rav Papa's ruling reveals to us that in a place like that, one does not have to consider the minority. Regarding this section of Gemara that we just learned, I want to point out, without any intention to pursue it in any depth, but I must point out that Tosfos Dibur Masva Hochi Garsina Mekachi has different girsos regarding the Gemara, and not less important, a major question needs to be answered, and that is, since when should I take into consideration the miut, the minority, and end up with a leniency, having her remain in the status of unmarried? This issue was taken up by the Tosfos Ri Hazoken. People who want to look into it, by all means, go there. We're continuing in the Gemara. Before we do so, though, we have a slash mark indicating a new train of thought, and on the side we have a nosei topic heading, which reads as follows: Ra'u shtar ksuba. A ksuba document was seen. Va'isha kiblo kiddushin me'acher, and the woman whose name appeared in the ksuba accepted marriage, accepted kiddushin from some other man. Haim yesh lahachzik oisa kimekudeshes l'rishon. Must we consider, or should we consider, that she's really married to the first man, the man whose name appears together with hers in the ksuba? The Gemara. Bo mine Rav Acha bar Rav Huna me Rava. Rav Acha asks, Huchsuk shtar ksuba b'shuk. There was seen a ksuba document. That's the financial guarantee that a woman receives when she marries a man. So a shtar ksuba was seen with names in it. And then he asks, Mahu, the question is very terse, but if she accepted kiddushin to another man, do we have to consider that she's really married to the first man, the man whose name appeared together with hers in this shtar ksuba? Omar lei. So Rava answers, v'chim b'pnei shemachzik shtar ksuba b'shuk, nachzik bo keishes ish. Just because you have a shtar ksuba, does that mean that the woman is assumed to be married? My havi Allah. again, the Gemara asks, what's the final ruling? Omar Ravashi. Be'asra, in, it depends on the practice. Be'asra de Mekachi for Hodar Kasvik Suba, in places that first a formal act of marriage takes place, and only then do they write up the ksuba. Chayshinon, then, upon seeing the ksuba, and the practice in that locale is first a formal act of marriage would have taken place, then we will consider her as married to the man whose name appears together with hers in the ksuba. The ksuba wouldn't have come to be if he hadn't first married her. Another approach, though, another practice, kasvi vahadar mekachi, in places that first a ksuba is prepared, and only afterwards do the men marry the women, perform a formal act of marriage. All right, then you see a ksuba, we're not choshesh that she is married to the person in whose name appears with her in the ksuba. The Gemara asks, Mekachi v'hadar kasvi pshita, if the custom of the place is first an act of marriage is done and only then do they write up a ksuba, it's obvious that you would be choshesh, you would consider her to have been married to the first man. So why do we need to be taught that which is obvious? Why does Rav Ashi tell us something that everyone could figure out on their own? Lo tzricha, it is necessary. The lo shchiach safra, it's a place that scribes are not commonly found. He's not a regular in that town. Mahu de tamo safra hu de isrami. There's room to think that maybe the husband chanced upon a sofer. And he knew he was going to marry a particular woman, and he had the sofer as like a real opportunity, you know, right up the ksuba, I'm planning to marry her, but he hasn't married her yet. So maybe we should consider that was the scenario, and she would be considered still unmarried, komash molon. So Rav Ashi, in his ruling, is telling us, you don't have to consider that. And since the practice was Mekachi v'hoda kasvi, upon seeing the ksuba, you assume that she was already married to that man. We'll call him the first guy. The Mishnah. Hamekadish isho bita, o isho v'achosa ka'achas, man who marries a woman and her daughter, or a woman and her sister, at once. In other words, he says, Shteichem mikudoshes li, both of you are married unto me. Ain't on mikudoshes. Neither one of them are married, and there is no need for a get. Umaise bechomesh noshim, ubahen shtei achoyas. It was a story involving five women. Amongst the five women were two sisters, the Likate Adam Echot Kalkola Shilteinim, and a man gathered together a basket full of figs, Fishalein Oisa Vishal Shvias Oisa. It was from fig trees that belonged to these women. However, it was a Shemitah year. Shemitah year, the produce is considered unowned. So this man gathered them together, and by gathering them together, he becomes the owner of them, since it's a Shemitah year, the Omar, and he said, Hare kuchan mikudoshes li b'kalkolazu. You are all married unto me with this basket full of figs. Ve'kiblo achas mehen ayadei kulan, and one of the women accepted the basket on behalf of all of them. Ve'yomru chachomim ein achoyos mikudoshes, and the chachomim said that the sisters are not married. Mino hanimili. What is the source for this? Omar Romi Barchamo. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's once again glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading. which reads Chipus achar mokor ledin de mekadesh isho bito shnei achoyos ein kiddushin toifsin afilu ba'achas man. We are searching for a source that teaches us that a man who marries two women that are sisters or mother and daughter, nothing takes hold even with one of them. There's no marriage whatsoever. So what's the source for that? We go back to our Gemara. Omar Romi Bar Chamo, Dioma Kro. Isha el achoisa lo sikach litzror. That's the pasuk. HaTorah Omra, the Torah tells us, Bisha shenasu tzorois zu lezu, at a time that the sisters would be like co-wives one to the other, lo yehe lo likuchim afilu b'achas mehen. There is no likuchim, there's no marriage even in one of them. Omar le rova I hachi. If that's so, that there is no marriage even in one of them, why would the Torah say that that man who would have an active intimacy with one of them would be chayev kores? Why he'd be chayev the severe punishment of kores? But if he isn't married to either one, so as far as this man is concerned, they're two unmarried women, and it's not proper to have intimacy with an unmarried woman, with a single woman, but it doesn't carry one who does that, assuming that she's not a nida, is not guilty of kores. So Rava is asking, Omar le Rava ihachi, that the pasuk is telling me that there is no marriage that takes hold with regard to either one. Hainu dichtiv enichusu hanefoshos ha'oisos mikerev amom. The pasuk simply goes on to say that there's a penalty for kores, who for someone who has intimacy with one of them. E kiddushin lo tafsi ba, if no marriage took hold with either one, kores mi mechayev, would there be any kores penalty? As we said, if there's no marriage with either one of them, they're single women. So his intimacy with them, it's an act of harlotry, but it doesn't carry with it a punishment of kores. Elo Omar Rova. Kra boze achazer. The pasuk that makes reference to the kores penalty is describing a case where you have, there were two sisters, or there was a mother and daughter, and actually, let me be more precise, the pasuk describes two sisters, but he had married one, and then the other, meaning one after the other. And in such a case, so he's considered married to the first one, the second one, no marriage takes hold. However, she is strictly forbidden. She's called the sister of your wife. She's called Achos Isha. And one who has intimacy with the sister of one's wife, he is in violation of a severe act of immorality and punishable by Kores. So that's what the Pasuk is talking about. Umasnisin, the Mishnah described a different case, Kidderabah. The Mishnah, which described the case of a man trying to marry two sisters at the same time, or mother and daughter at the same time, nothing takes hold. Why not? Well, nothing takes hold based on Rabbo's din, Rabbo's analysis. The Omer Rabbo called She'eino Bozeh Achar Zeh, when you can't have the second following the first. In other words, using our example, there were two sisters. There was Rachel and Leah. A man married Rachel. So there is no way of the marriage of that man marrying Leah. So you can't have Leah after Rachel. That's called She'eno Bozeh Acharzeh. Leah cannot be married after Rachel. Afilu b'basachaseino. So therefore, even if you try to do them simultaneously, it won't take hold. Nothing will take hold. So with that, we're introduced to a prominent principle. And just to repeat the words, kol she'eino bozeh acharzeh, if the act cannot be done one following the other, then simultaneously nothing will take hold. This is an idea that we applied with a specific example, but it has very broad ramifications, or say broad application. And that's what the Gemara will continue with. Before we go into the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, which reads, Dinoi shel Rabba, Rabba's halacha, kol she'eino bozeh acharzeh, those acts where the second cannot follow the first. When I say cannot follow, it means it won't take hold. Then, if you try to do the two at the same time, simultaneously, nothing will take hold. Under the Mivneh, the structural note, a triangle appears, and we call this a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take, back-and-forth style Gemara, with the point facing up, kushos aldino sharab, they represent questions on Rabbo's din, and the inverted triangle, tshuvos, responses. Let your eye scan ahead, as we so often recommend in Gemara markings, and you'll see how you continue on to daf nun aleph, omen aleph, and this marking scheme, the triangles, continues quite a few times. As we go along, there's also a numbering scheme, and that the numbers essentially introduce new sources which are brought as kashis on Rabbah. So we continue. Gufo. Omar Rabo, kol she'eno bozeh acharzeh, afilu b'basachaseino. Anything that, as we said, cannot happen in a succeeding or successive fashion, it won't take hold even if you do it simultaneously. Esfei Abaye. So Abaye raises a question from a Tanaic source. We continue at the top of Daf Nun Aleph. The source that we see here at the top of Daf Nun Aleph deals with the topic of the Miser Tithe. The Miser Tithe from produce, Miser, the word Miser, you see the word Eser in it, 10, and this Miser means a tenth of your produce, you are to tithe. There are quite a bit more detail to it, there are different kinds of Misers and all, but any given Miser, we're referring to a Miser. You're supposed to take off 10%. 10% is, as its name implies, 10%, not 20%. The source says, Hamar be'meiser, someone who takes off more than the 10%, he takes out, let's see, instead of a tenth, he takes a fifth off, that's 20%. Pei roisov misukonim, the 80% of the fruits that remain behind, they are considered misukonim, tithed, umaisris mikukolim. But the maisris that you declared as maiser are mikukolim, messed up. Rashi elaborates on this, but for our purposes, you took off, as we said, more than 10%. The shame maiser, The labeling or the category of Miser applies only to 10%, but I don't know which is the 10% when you're holding 20% and claiming that it's a tithe. The Gemara asks, in other words, I should say, Abaye brings the question to the fore. Amai, why do you say that the peiros are mesukanim. Why do you say that it's an effective means of tithing? And in other words, something has happened over here. There is an effective act of tithing, and you're also telling me that the tithe itself is messed up. Why say that? Neymar, you could have said, if Rabbah is correct, kol she'eno bozeh achar zeh, afilu bevas achazeno. If you had tithed 10% in the right way, so that's your 10%. If you go to the pile of produce and then take another 10%, that's nothing. It's a joke. So that's kol she'eno bozachar zeh. So even bavasachaseno. So even if you try to do it like he did over here simultaneously, nothing should have taken effect. There shouldn't be any effect. And yet the source on the top says that if you do that, first of all, peiros of mesukanim, and second of all, the tithe that you did tithe has a tithe in it, but it's just mixed together with something that shouldn't have been present there, but something took place. So this source presents a problem for Rabbah's principle of kol she'eno bozachar zeh afilu bevasachaseino, because in this case you have a situation of something that could not have taken place bozeh achar zeh. Had you tithed, as we said, 10% properly, and then tried to tithe another 10%, that would have been a joke. Nothing would have taken hold. So when you do the two simultaneously, according to Rabbah, nothing should have taken effect. Omar lay. So Rabbah answers, shiny meiser. The example of meiser is different. De isay lechatsoyim. Isay means it is, it's present. Lechatsoyim, in halves. What do we mean by that? De I omar tiskadesh palgo palgo de chitzo kocha. If he had, imagine, taken off the 20% of the produce, of the grains. In this case, the Gemara uses as an example wheat grains. And he declared that half of each wheat grain is to be the tithe. So he took off 20% of the wheat, and then proclaimed that only half of each wheat grain is holy, is the tithe. That would have been effective, because in that case he really is declaring only 10% of the produce to be a tithe. Since there is, we'll say, relevance of a tithe to the 20% of the grains in the way we described it, so therefore each grain will have the power of becoming fully tithed, or fully declared as a tithe. And Rashi explains this a little more. Let's take a look at the Rashi together, just a couple lines down from here. Deim Omar Tiskadish Palga Palga Dechitzo Kocha Hilkoch Kishi Ifrish Bevas Achas Yosem Kishior. When he separated in one shot more than the necessary amount, Yesh Lo Lameiser Lachul Al Kol Chito Vechito Lefi Cheshbon. Each grain of wheat had the possibility of becoming meiser in lefi cheshbon, means in a relative fashion, so that if he took off twice the amount that is required for the tithe, so each grain lefi cheshbon is fit to have half of it being declared as the meiser. The ikar lemeimar dinitfasu kulhu lefi cheshbon, and therefore there's room to say that all of those grains become tithed, as we said, in its proper percentage, so that when he separated 20% of the grains, in fact half of each grain is the miser, and the other half of the grain is the non-miser. So the 20% of the grains that he separated can be described as being an effective tithe, because in reality, only 10% of the total harvest is being declared as miser. And second point of Maisus Mekukolin, that's because when you have that 20% and you're saying each grain is half miser, half chulin, go figure out which half of the grain is miser, which half of the grain is chulin. So it's all mixed together, hence it's called Maisros of Mekukolin. Now that analysis is appropriate for grains. Rashi goes on, Avol Gabi Achoyos, with regard to two human beings, two sisters, Leko lemeimar nitfesu ksas kidushin akol chada v'chada. You can't say that part kidushin takes hold with regard to each one of the girls. Half of this girl is married, half of this sister is married, and half of the other sister is married. That's ridiculous. So there's no parallel, and therefore Rabbo's din remains intact. In light of this, in spite of the question raised from the Meiser, Marba the Meisers. Let's continue in the Gemara. Vahare, Meiser Behema. A person is expected to remove 1/10, 10% of his animal births during any given year. That's called Meiser Behema. The general procedure is that you would take all the newborn animals of that year. And here, once again, we're speaking in very general terms, not getting involved with the details, the fact that the act of Meiser is done three times during the year. That's discussed at length elsewhere. However, for our purposes, you would take all of the animals born that year. They're passed through a narrow alley, a narrow passageway, one by one, and you count 1, 2, 3, 4 as each animal emerges at the end of this passageway, and number 10 is declared Meiser Behema, and that's brought to the Beis Hamikdash as a sacrifice. So Meiser Behema, we can describe it as Daleka Lechatzoyin. You can't describe a half of an animal being the Meiser Behema. Veleka Bozeh Acharzeh. And that you can't declare animal number 10 as it's emerging from the narrow passageway. You're going to declare it as Meiser Behema. And then the next animal to emerge, you're going to declare that also as Meiser Behema. That would not be effective. So that's, you see that it's, once you call number 10 that emerges as number 10, and you then the next animal, the 11th animal that comes out, you call it as number 10, it doesn't become holy, it doesn't become sanctified. So Meiser Behema, you can see, does not have the characteristic of Kedusha lechatzoyin, become half sanctified. It does not have the property of bozeh acharzeh. V'yomar Rava, some versions have Rava here. Yotzu shnayim basiri, two animals emerged at the number 10 position. In other words, you were counting the animals passing through the narrow passageway. 1, 2, 3, reached 9. And after the 9th animal, two animals came out. V'koron asiri, and you declared them as 10. The result is asiri v'chadasar muroven zebozeh. They are, the 10 and 11 are mixed one with the other. What does that mean? So we take a look at Rashi. Ve'achadosor muravin. Echod mehem meiser gomor. One of the two animals is full-fledged meiser. Avol eino yodua ezo hu. But I don't know which one it is. Vasheni shein shlomim alav. The second animal has the label of a shlomim sacrifice. Kedin Achadus Shikara Asiri. There is a law that as you were counting the animals, and you said nine went out, and the next animal came out, which was the tenth animal. And when the 11th animal came out, you declared it to be number 10. So Rashi's referring to that and says that the second of these two animals has a din of shlamim, kedin achadus shekor asiri, achar shito v'kor asiri chi. You called the 10th animal 9, and the 11th animal you called 10. The kaima lanshu shlamim, if that happened, then the 11th animal, which you called 10, has the din of a korban shlamim. Kibbutz, come on. Hi, have nami shlamim. Shari achadasar ze afhu achar kriyas chi nikrasiri. In the case where you were counting the animals, you counted 9, it went out, and then 2 animals came out. These 2 animals are basically 10 and 11, and you called them 10. Well, what have we just done? You've called an 11 10. Varehein Ruvin. And, well, now they're mixed together. I have a formal Meiser Behema together with another animal that has the status of Shlomim. I don't know which is which. V'yiru Achi Yistavu. They shall graze until they develop a blemish. V'yavi Behema Schulin. And then you would bring another animal, an unsanctified common animal. V'yoymar Komokom Shein Shlomim Yemuchulo Al Behema Zu. And you'd say, well, whichever one of these two was the shlamim, let it, now that it's blemished, be its sanctity transferred onto this animal that was the chulin, the yikrav zu shlamim, and then you offer this third animal, this chulin, as the shlamim, vashnayim necholim levailim, and the two animals that now have blemishes in them will be consumed by the owner. They're not sacrifices, obviously. Shishneim sofek meiser, meiser ve'menecha b'mum l'baylim. Both of them are sofek meiser, doubtful meiser. And what's the rule with a doubtful meiser animal that developed a blemish? The owner eats it, he slaughters it, and eats it. Ve'acha di'eno b'zachar zeh. In this example of the meiser behema, you don't have one following the other taking hold. Ilu korla asiri asiri. Once you call the 10th animal number 10, lo kideish achadus or klal, the 11th isn't going to become sanctified. V'chi koro ba'adodi, and yet, when you refer to them together as 10, choshev chabinai meiser lifter as a tisha, one of them is a formal meiser, thereby exempting the 9 that preceded it from needing any further tithing. So we turn back to the Gemara. And our question then is, Meiser Behema, which we just said you don't have Bozeh Acharzeh, after you declared the number 10 animal as number 10, you can't declare nothing takes hold with regard to the number 11 animal. And yet, Rava tells us that if 2 come out in that number 10 position and you call them Asiri, sanctity takes hold on both of the animals, and Rashi made the main point and said that there is a formal accomplishing of Meiser Behema, exempting the first 9 from needing any further tithing. So, what do we see? We see something that's not Bozeh Acharzeh, and yet Bevas Achas, it does have an effect. The Gemara rejects this as a question. Shiny Meiser Behema, the Issei Betos. Meiser Behema is different because the idea of number 11 becoming sanctified has a precedent in the case of a mistake, the Snan. That point of Tos is now illustrated in the following source. Korah L'chi Asiri, a man got all confused and he called the number 9 animal 10. U'l'asiri chi, and the number 10 animal he called it 9. U'l'achadosar Asiri, and this is what we really want to emphasize. He called the 11th animal 10. Shloshton Mikudashim. So we have a precedent for a number 11 becoming sanctified. That in that case. So therefore, since there's precedent for number 11 becoming sanctified in a case of tois, like we described, so too when the 11 animal comes out together with the number 10 animal, and he calls them both 10, do we say that sanctity descends upon the two, as we saw? The main point is that this din of Maaser Behema has the tois precedent, which you don't have in the case of two sisters that you try to marry at once. Question. The question that follows comes from the case of a korban todah. A korban todah, in English sometimes referred to as a thanks offering, is a sheep that is accompanied by 40 loaves. 40 loaves, 40 baked loaves. Of course, as you can imagine, there's much more detail than we're giving you over here, but that's what we have to know for our sukkah. 40 loaves come along with the korban todah. When you slaughter the animal, the sacrifice, the sheep, so the loaves become sanctified as a part of the as part of the korban. That's by way of background. Hare, the Gemara asks, toida, the lesa betois. There is no tois precedent when it comes to a korban toda. We're going to be describing very shortly a fellow who brings 80 loaves instead of 40, twice the amount. The concept of tois is irrelevant to the toda. V'leso nami bozeh achar zeh. If a person sanctified the 40 requisite loaves, he can't attempt to sanctify an additional 40. There's nothing. There's no sanctification, no sanctity that takes hold. You can look in the Rashi, in the wide lines under the Gemara text, about the 7-8 lines under the Gemara text. V'lesnu bazach hazeh, shimshochta al arboim chalos. If you slaughtered the sheep that represents the todah sacrifice, and you had slaughtered it with 40 loaves in mind. The chozar v'yomar al arboim acheris yikatshu gam elu emelu, and he says on 40 others, let these also be sanctified together with the first group of 40. Lo kitshu, they don't become sanctified. Shatayda tuna arboim chalos. The korban toda requires 40 loaves. And the Rashi goes on to say what we said before, that the slaughtering of the sacrifice imparts upon them inherent sanctity called Kedushas HaGuf. So far, what do we know about a korban todah and its loaves? There is no element of tois. There's no bozeh achar zeh, the itmar. And yet it's taught as follows. Toida shenishchata al shmoinim chalos. A person slaughtered the korban todah with 80 loaves present. Chizkiya Omar, Kachilar boy mitov shmonim. 40 of the 80 loaves become sanctified. As far as this fellow is concerned, he has fulfilled his Toda requirements. What do you do in terms of how do you eat them? That's already discussed elsewhere in the Shas. But for our purposes, what do you see here? And by the way, you see we have a bracketed phrase, and the reason for the brackets is we're not focusing on Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Rabbi Yochanan will read it, but the focus right now is Chizkiya. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, lo kachi lo arboim mitoch shmonim. There is no sanctification on 40 of them from amongst those 80. But if you're focusing on Chizkiya, who, by the way, was the teacher of Rabbi Yochanan, he says sanctity takes hold, even though there's no tois, it's not bozeh achar zeh, so that would appear to be a problem for Rabbo's original halacha describing the two sisters. True, you can't marry a second sister after you married the first one as your wife. That's Eino Bozar Hazeh, but if you were to marry the two simultaneously, something should take hold. There should be a marriage if you're going to follow the Todah precedent. The Gemara responds, Lav itmara lo amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, was it not said concerning the case of the loaves of the Todah by Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, hakol moidim? Now you'll notice we have a double underline to highlight the point at which there's agreement and the point at which we have controversy. But the point at which there's controversy is, you'll see, is irrelevant to our situation. The Gemara says, Hakol moidim, Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan agree, Kol hecha di omar, kachi lo arboim mitoch shmonim, where he declares at the outset, I want 40 of the 80 loaves to become sanctified. Kachi, sanctification takes hold. He wasn't attempting to do all 80. If he says, Lo yikachu arboim elo im kein kachi shmoinim, I don't want 40 loaves becoming sanctified unless all 80 become sanctified. Lo kachi. There too, there's agreement that no sanctification of loaves takes hold. We take a look at Rashi. We have a star in the Rashi to help you find it in the lower part of the wide lines. Lo kachu. Kide rabo, based on Rabbo's teaching, de chol she'eno bozeach arzeh, eino bevas achas. Since after 40 loaves would have been sanctified, you can't then declare another 40 sanctified. Likewise, or as so too, to say, lo yikachu arboim elin kein kishishmainim, I don't want 40 unless all 80 can be sanctified. Well, all 80 can't be sanctified based on Rabbo's teaching. Since you can't have it bozeh achar zeh, you can't have it bevas achas. So that's the main point for our discussion. What about the machlokes Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan? Lo nechliku elo bistam. Where a person brought 80 loaves, but he didn't say anything. And he slaughtered the keves, the sheep, which is his thanks offering, which is the korban toida. Mar sovar lachrayis komichvin. Chizkiya is of the opinion that his bringing of the 80 loaves was only that if something would happen to the first 40, so he'd have a backup 40 loaves. But he had no intention for all 80 loaves to become sanctified. Therefore, Chizkiya said that 40 of the 80 loaves become sanctified. Umor sovar, Rabbi Yochanan holds, lekorban godol ka mechavein. He intended to bring a big sacrifice. I mean, he intended for all of them to become sanctified, and that is simply wrong. It cannot be. The Gemara asks, "V'rova lama le lishnuye kirabo." Notice we have a little star to the middle right hand side of the Gemara text. This tells you to look back at the Nun Omid Beis, three lines from the bottom. Rava was explaining the role of the Pasuk and what the Mishnah was teaching, and explained the Mishnah that the sisters or the mother and daughter are not married based on Rabbah's principle of kol she'eino bozeh chazeh bevas achas eino. He could have, that is, Rava could have said, tepuk lei kiddushin shein mesurin lebiyaninu. He could have said that neither one are married because it's a type of, let's say, attempted marriage where it would not result in his ability to do bia, to have intimacy with them, with either one. Let us look at Rashi, who explains what's bothering the Gemara. We're looking at Rashi about 10 lines up from the bottom. In the Rashi, in the middle of the line, V'rova loma le lishnui li'el taimo demasnisen dekotoni eino mekudeshes kidrava. Why did Rava, back on Nun Amud Beis, have to explain the Mishnah that said that neither one is married, based on Rabba, who said, "Kol sheino bozer chazer b'vasa chaseino, tepuk le deafilu lo kidesh elo achas mehen, elo shelo piresh eizo hi." Even if he had married one of the two sisters, but didn't specify which one, even in a case like that, Isle la Rava, Dana Mukadeshes, Rava holds there's no marriage. The Kiddushin Shein Masurin Labiahain. In a case like that, it would be a marriage that cannot be followed up by intimacy. If a man had approached two sisters and he says, I am hereby marrying one of you, and they agree, so one of them are married, can he have intimacy with any one of them? No. Shein Yodua Eze Mehen Achoisisha. He doesn't know which one is the sister of his wife. Can't have intimacy with the sister of your wife. Vishamina Leila Rava. Diomala, come on. We will discover Rava teaching. Kiddushin Shein Mesurin Ruyin Labia Eino Kiddushin. An offer of marriage that cannot be followed by an act of intimacy. So the initial act of marriage is nothing. So the question is, why did Rava have to explain the Mishnah of Mekadesh Isho Bito or Isho Vachosa in terms of Rabba's halacha of Kol She'eino Bozer Chazer Afilu B'bas Achas Eino? Even without that, and as Rashi says, even without speaking about a case where he married both of them, attempted to marry both of them, even if he attempted to marry one of the two, still there would have been no marriage. We continue in the Gemara. Lidvorov de Rami Bar Chama Komar. Rava's intention on Nun Amud Beis was a reaction to Rami Bar Chama. And we look again at the Rashi. Lidvorov de Rami Bar Chama Komar La. According to you, that were citing, you were citing the pasuk of Yishael Achoisa Lo Sikach Litzror Lo Sukma Likra Bevasachas. Rava was addressing Rami Bar Chama and says, don't set up the pasuk that you cited as a case where he marries two sisters at once, or mother and daughter at once. The Kashya Fenichrusu, because if you try to set it up like that, you're going to run into the problem of why would he be punishable by Kores? A man tried to marry two sisters at once, neither one is married. Why then, if he has intimacy with them, would he be punishable? They're still single women. Ela Ukmi Bozacharzeh. Rava was telling Rami Bar Chama, the Pasuk you should set up where he married one of the sisters in a formal, acceptable marriage, and then attempted to marry the second one. V'hodar tepuk loch bevas achas demasnisin mine ubei mishum derabo. And then, once you establish the pasuk as talking about a case of ze achar ze, which explains why there's kores of having intimacy with the second one, then explain the case of the Mishnah of a man marrying two sisters simultaneously, that nothing takes hold based on Rabba of Kol Sheino Bazachazeh Afilu Bazachaz Eino. But as far as Rava is concerned, even without speaking about a case of a marriage of the two sisters at once, but even where you try to attempt to marry one of the two sisters and you simply don't identify which one you have married, that's called Kiddushin Shein Mesurin Labia. And in a case like that, there is no Kiddushin. Before we conclude our shiur, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.